The year, 2004. The date, Tuesday, 30th November, a time of crisis. George W. Bush has recently been re-elected to his second term of President of the United States, and Tony Blair is scampering around, digging up the South Lawn at the White House, frantically searching for WMDs. But most importantly, House MD Episode 3, Occam's Razor, has just been released. And that's what we're both here to talk about today, an episode of House 15 years after the fact. So, hi, my name's Harvey, and this is my co-host. Introduce yourself, Gareth.
Yeah, I'm Gareth, or Gaz, as they call me. I'm here to watch some House MD for the first time.
Absolutely. So, as you can imagine, 15 years after the fact for an episode, quite late, but I'd watched House back in the days when it actually aired, but recently Gaz decided to start watching the show. And so we obviously were talking about it and we thought, well, no one really talks about House that much these days. So what would be more interesting than having a podcast where we recorded those kind of meandering conversations while we watch an episode?
Well, I'm a complete virgin to this. Occam's Razor, obviously, a philosophical concept introduced by William of Ockham, lived in Surrey, I think. I think I passed the town once when I was cycling around.
Did you know Nothing Ockham's really... first name, or did you look that up?
No, I knew his name. I did study philosophy at university some many moons ago, so I am aware of William of Ockham. I might be wrong. Maybe it's like Jeremy of Ockham or something, and I've just misremembered.
Well, this is one of the, like, a trend of House episodes, which names itself after, like, a logical method or, like, a belief system, and then spends the episode exploring that belief system or logical method. I think there's a few others. I remember the Socratic method being one.
Yeah.
Although none spring to mind now that I've actually said that as a running theme, maybe they dropped it after the Socratic method.
Well, my Wikipedia research tells me that, you know, ideas about logic would not be alien to the creator of House, Mr. David Shaw. And so I'm guessing he would know all about these things, and these will be explained very laboriously with meticulous detail in this episode.
No, so the system, what we're going to do is we basically have an episode running in the background and we sort of chat about it as things come up and we edit out the boring bits. But basically, yeah, we're going to, you know, if you're a fan of House and you like hearing people talk about House, we're going to watch episode 3. We're going to chat about it and we're going to see if anything interesting crops up.
Yep, and my fresh perspective on these things is going to illuminate all sorts of things that Harvey's dementia-addled brain will not pick up immediately. Or, you know, he's watched it. He's obsessed over it. He's probably looking at the bigger picture, whereas I'm kind of going, oh, this is quite alien. Why is House being a douchebag here? Or why is Cameron doing this? Or, you know, all these things, all these beautiful little intricate things that I've never seen before.
It's quite interesting going back and watching the series because, like, there's a lot of stuff set up in the early episodes, which you kind of take as read. But I forget that at one point House was actually setting up these kind of tropes that would continue for 8 seasons.
Wow.
And wouldn't really develop that much. Like, which, I mean, I'm sure you noticed during the episode and hopefully we'll spot as we go. And I do wonder when that stops happening, because obviously there's 24 episodes of development. I'm interested to see when kind of everything's cemented in place.
I think David Shaw, being a meticulous mind, will have mapped all of this out over 8 seasons he's premeditated this.
Yeah.
And I guess he's mapped it all out. He's got it all in his head. He's spoken with Brian Singer, who may or may not be a bit dodgy, and said, hey, look, Brian, this is how I want to do it. I've mapped out 8 seasons. And Brian's like, yeah, okay, whatever. And then they press the execute button on that, and it all ran across. But, yeah, it'd be interesting to see where the tropes kind of set in and what are the tropes in reaction to, because obviously it's a medical procedural drama, and is it going to follow the tropes of medical procedure of the genre, or is it going to deviate? Is it going to subvert our expectations? Is it going to jump the shark? Is it going to...
Well, yes, it definitely does that.
Well, spoiler, I don't know that. Really?
Yeah, classic house style. Obviously, they open with the cold open, where somebody is ill.
He kind of looks a bit like Hayden Christensen, or like a kind of photocopied version, a facsimile of him. That kind of they pressed his head against the photocopier, and that's what came out.
Yeah, he does sort of look like a young Patrick Bateman.
Oh, that's a good reference.
He's well, you sort of were saying before we started recording this that he's like. That like the young people are terribly written in this. Do you wanna go into?
I think David Shaw hates young people.
Why?
Because he makes them seem so vacuous and stupid in comparison to his more complex characters. I think the younger they are, the more stupid they get. He has like a quotient, which kind of works. I mean, when he's writing script for a baby, I mean, they don't have to really do much.
No, that's true. I do remember, I mean, we'll get to it at some point, but I do know that in this episode, the two are engaged in college.
Yeah.
Which seems to be a way to make them seem as like, you know, bad, poor decision makers as possible.
Yeah. And also the room is now suffering from a like Richter scale 9 earthquake and if you look at the establishing shot, it's supposed to be a robust sandstone building. And they've just kind of just been supposedly rocking the entire edifice of the building with their sexual intercourse, which is really worrying.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, I've got to give it to them. They last longer than I do.
Oh, Jesus.
But it is.
Yeah. Of course.
A 15-second scene. But it is a fucking insane opening in terms of them having sex. But well, that then becomes a theme later. Well, I mean, they make it so obvious because then later in the episode, there is kind of like a bit of sexual tension. Mm. It's all connected.
The thing that gets me is that she goes, oh, damn, I am so good. It's just such a throwaway line of, but I'm not that good. And it's like, he's now dying.
Yeah, I mean, there's clearly something wrong with him.
Such shit dialogue. I'm not that good.
I do think a problem with the patients, and this is just the nature of like shows like this where there are so many characters popping in, but none of the patients really like they're usually trying to prove a point or like explore a theme. That like they're kind of saying tropes and like they're not really characters. They're just like,
I'm still sticking with my thesis that he hates young people. I think David Shaw hates young people. He did write this episode, and also Bryan Singer directed this episode, which is surprising to me with the room shaking, insane setup. I'm going with the simplest explanation for this, which is Occam's. Obviously Occam's razor. Which is there was some sort of earthquake in the Princeton area while they were having sex, and that resulted in the insane establishing shot. Maybe it's like a subline in David Shaw's script or something, I don't know.
And there we go, we move on to our first clinic scene.
Yes.
This one involves House giving a monologue to everyone.
Oh, yes.
So that they don't want him as the doctor. Yeah, I think this scene, like, definitely, especially this episode, establishes the antagonism between House and Cuddy a bit more. Because in the earlier episodes, he didn't like being, like, he just didn't like doing clinic duty.
Yeah.
But I think this episode definitely establishes, like, that there is actual, like, an antagonism, that House and Cuddy are constantly trying to one-up each other.
Yes.
And I think it brings a bit more of a character to Cuddy, like, because she plays into it. Like, she's like, in a position of power, but she's, like, not above using really cheap or borderline, like, childish tactics, especially when you're the Dean of Medicine, just to make House do his job. Like, in most circumstances, House would have been fired by now, which I think is a well-known fact.
But he's so brilliant at his job.
Yeah.
You could not get rid of him.
And that's, I think that's what makes Cuddy, like, a particularly good, like, authority character, is that she's at least, like, interesting. They could have just made her extremely serious. Just be like, oh, House, no, I won't do that. And, like, for House to prove her wrong.
Well, he I think also, maybe he's always bringing her down to his level. So Cuddy is always being pushed into House's level of social interaction. And so he's like, okay, I'll just play the same game as you, House.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, you mean in the sense that, like, if Wilson was trying to have a nice man contest?
Yeah.
That she would play into that as well.
Yeah. She's incredibly petty, but quite, yeah, in a lot of ways, very petty. But it seems like there's a big subtext between them from my first impressions.
Yeah. And, like, speaking of Wilson at this point, I still don't think, yeah, Wilson and House, actually, this episode starts with Wilson, with House suspicious that Wilson just wants him to help the patient because he's being nice.
Yeah.
Which, like, the show is really still struggling to show Wilson being nice as, like, an interesting facet of his personality.
Yeah.
I think later on it definitely establishes the, like, self-destructive element of the niceness, which House brings out of him. But up to this point, like, I swear the pilot and this both start with House and Wilson talking about a patient that Wilson shouldn't really even know about, but for some reason Wilson is, like, invested in House helping this person.
Well, it's following that Sherlock Holmes trope, which is, you know, a case comes to Wilson, to Watson, I guess, and then that is referred on to Sherlock Holmes, and it's that kind of, you know, Sherlock Holmes setup that they're utilizing in these earlier episodes, and Watson is seen as, like, a reasonable guy, well-adjusted, and in the same way Sherlock Holmes is flawed, but ingenious in the way that he can use medicine as a way to solve problems. Well, that is his job, but so that was a bit innocuous, wasn't it?
Well, the team definitely play more of a Watson role going forward. I don't particularly remember Wilson bringing cases forward to that extent.
Okay,
but I also think that Wilson House interaction at the start is just to establish, like, because Wilson is trying to, like, trick him into doing it. And House even then says, like, oh, you know why I'm going to take this case, which is because it's interesting. Yeah. That's what I mean about, like, the kind of, like, House MD tropes being set up. Like, it's still being set up that, like, oh, House only does things because, you know, they're interesting. He's not a doctor that, like, goes after the human element. He goes after the Rubik's Cube element.
Yeah, he's always looking for the mystery in a case. Low blood pressure, wasn't it? And, the symptoms that interested him was the fact there was low blood pressure, but the IV fluids weren't boosting the blood pressure. But now we're into the proper differential diagnosis trademark section. So they've got all these symptoms and they've got to try and figure out.
Oh, there's something else I wanted to discuss about. Oh, yeah, the bit in the clinic scene as well. I think that is a nice moment, which kind of, like, House does a nice thing for her, but only because it's going to be antagonistic to authority.
Which is
quite a nice character moment. Like, House is being nice, but you can't tell why he's being nice.
Yeah.
Like, he's not
expecting an ulterior motive.
Hmm. which I don't know in this episode if that is ever, like, you never know whether or not House is like doing things just for the sake of it, like if he's actually ever just being nice because he wants to be nice.
Yeah. Also, another trope that I've noticed in the past two episodes is Cameron being awkward around patients.
Oh, really?
She's just weird around patients. She'll just make weird remarks. Like, rawr.
Well, kind of, especially in this episode, it does feel like Cameron and Chase are definitely seem to be on the same side. Like, they're kind of, like, just going with the flow, whereas Foreman is definitely, like, the standout one.
Yeah, he doesn't want House to, like he said, you know, it's not bad, you know, House thinks outside the box, and sometimes Foreman says, well, thinking outside the box isn't a good idea.
Mm.
We need to do things by the book, people.
The book that I read.
Please.
Well, it's very strange because Chase and Cameron really champion the way that he, like, thinks outside the box and comes up with decisions. Yeah. And yet, like, and Foreman is the one saying, oh, that's insane, which is, like, a good character establishment. But, like, Cameron in this is really optimistic about the way House thinks. But, like, there are times when Cameron is like, you're disgusting that you're even, like, asking us to do that. So I don't know if that's kind of, if that's an establishing thing, or they make her slowly over time realize that he's too insane. But it does feel at the moment that, like, Cameron and Chase, like, don't really stand out. I mean, aside from being, like, weirdly awkward around patients.
Cameron is the one that's awkward around patients. I think Chase is kind of the trope of the kind of, you know, medical procedural doctor in front of the patients. It's very much more the written as a charismatic character. And also, there's mild kind of weird, maybe racism in this with the ghetto euphemism thing being used so overtly. But
yeah, I did.
That's a weird aging. It's aged weirdly, I guess, in comparison to now.
Yeah, watching this again, there's lots of yeah, like, it's not something that you would like say. Like, no, I don't mean in terms of even offensiveness. It's such a, like, weird way to get, like...
Yeah, that's
it's very clunky. It's just very blunt. It's extremely clunky to bring back to the fact that Foreman's black. I don't know. I wouldn't say it's, like, the most, like, elegant.
Yeah, maybe I was a bit too strong saying it was racist. I don't know. Maybe we're opening a can of worms and you can edit it out later, okay. I think.
Well, they go straight from that to the ooh. It's like the... Like, oh, we saw the sex in the opening about how the woman's saying, like, oh, you know, maybe I put this guy in the hospital through sex. And then that's kind of connected to, ooh, Cameron's got a bit of a thing over Chase because she's a lady who can have sex.
Bit of sexual politics in there now.
Absolutely.
Now discussing the power plays that happen between men and women, allegedly.
Absolutely. Especially, like, going back and watching this, it's, I mean, you know, obviously knowing where Chase and Cameron eventually end up as well, but it's interesting seeing, like, Chase and Foreman talking about Cameron, like, in that way, separately. Yeah. Like, it feels like they're strangers that have just met.
Yeah.
And they're, like, talking about someone behind their back, like, you know, because they don't know who wants to have sex with Cameron, what they think of Cameron. And it's, it's quite interesting going back and, like, you know, seeing that this was established, because after a few seasons, you get used to these people all knowing each other. And it is interesting, like, how these things were established in that way.
He's trying to drive Foreman into the ground with testing and obsessing over the case. He wants to mold Foreman into a house of his own.
Mm. Which is a trap that Foreman falls instantly into.
It's like a small house, like a mini house or a protege house, is the unit of description, like a bungalow or a flat.
Is that one of those ghetto euphemisms?
No. You know, it's a smaller version of house. A bungalow? Or is it a flat? He's creating a little flat.
Yeah, it's a bungalow MD.
Oh, is that Metroid he's playing there in that Game Boy Advance SD? I can't tell.
It is.
Oh, fantastic.
Well, this is the part of the episode where the parents appear.
There's also, can I just say, a little factoid. Mm-hmm. The patient who's playing on the Game Boy Advance SD is in Mad Men. She plays a secretary, a recurring character.
Fantastic.
All right, anyway, sorry about that.
Her career continued past this. I'm very happy for her.
Indeed.
But, yeah, the parents come in and there's this weird... I don't know why the parents hate the girlfriend. I know they're protective over their son, but it does seem extremely forced. I think it's probably like the weakest part of the episode.
Yeah.
They seem to she's giving him drugs, and it's like, are parents like this in America? Like, right. The entire reason that they hate her is just so strange.
Cuckoo in the nest, trying to subvert their authority, trying to take over and look after him when they know what's best. It's a trope from medical procedural dramas where there's a tension between the spouse or lover of the character who is ill and the mother and father or family.
Mm.
So... yeah, it is pretty weak. Oh, Chase has spilt some coffee on purpose to get Cameron's attention. That's not weird.
Well, this is the sex subplot between Cameron and Chase, which is it is built up over season one, in all credit, like it doesn't just go nowhere.
Mm.
But it's extremely clunky to start with.
Yeah, it's like, I'm going to describe sex in a medical context and make it seem very, very raunchy.
But the thing I at least like gives, what I like about this scene at least, although it is a bit like weird, is that, it does at least give some bite to Cameron. In that, you know, you saw her disagreeing with Foreman about it, thinking it was disgusting. But then behind his back, like while in private, she does like test it out to take advantage of it. And it doesn't just make Cameron seem like an incredibly soppy character. Like she does a harmless thing that is, you know, really manipulative. And in a way proves Foreman's point as well, which I don't know if that's David Chase. Trying to prove a
David
point
Chase
that women have power like that, or it's like
David
at least a character
Chore.
Moment. David Shaw.
David Chase is the creator of The Sopranos.
Oh, true. Too many Davids. Or David Shaw. I don't know if it's David Shaw like trying to prove a weird point. Maybe this is like his. There's definitely a thing about House early on where it definitely focuses a lot on like sex and race and like uses all these like clunky. Like weird ways to explore that, like in the first episode where House is like talking about like how Foreman has street smarts. I don't know if they're trying to prove like, I don't know if they're just trying to show a diverse cast and like focus on them as if they're character traits, because I definitely think in a modern show they would have like a diverse cast but they wouldn't focus on them, but House MD like seems to want to focus on them like they're like interesting things to explore.
Yeah. It's an interesting one, and maybe from our perspective, we kind of don't see it in our time, 14 years hence.
15.
Don't see it. 15, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
It's a strange one. Mm. Maybe what we see as a sledgehammer in our time is a fine sculptor's chisel in theirs.
Yeah, because I at the time I was like so young while watching this, and now I've watched it so much later on it seems really clunky, but I don't know if at the time this is like, oh my god, this is like really exploring things that haven't been explored before.
So we're getting to the point where the patient has been injected with this stuff to anesthetize him, and then we go and do a lumbar puncture to get some bone marrow out of him. And if you think about it in a particular way, it looks very grotesque. And Foreman just behind, below the pelvis shot as well. It's not a good look.
Yeah, Foreman's Brian fist Singer. Is out of shot. We don't know what's going on.
And the patient is grimacing.
Well, Foreman, in this scene. This scene is so strange because of the way that Foreman, this guy is like, I'm not sure if Foreman's talking really calmly about what's going to happen to relax him, or just because Foreman is completely psychotic.
Because he's being shaped into a little flat or bungalow, MD, I think it's psychotic, but there you go.
Yeah, because he's so like, you know, concerned about the patient's well-being. And then he's like, not going, oh, I hope you're all right, mate.
He's just going, I'm going to insert this into your spine and I'm going to extract something out of it. Are you ready? Oh, Cuddy versus House Round 3.
There we go. Well, what I like as well about the scene where, like, because how she breaks the chain of House trying to piss her off is that she involves Wilson.
Yeah.
Which is quite a cruel thing to do. Because I know that she's telling House that, oh, you know, I know what you're doing and I'm going to, like, you know, inconvenience other people as a way to get around that. Because Wilson's a nice guy.
Mm.
Like, Wilson doesn't need to be disturbed over this. But, like, Cuddy just weaponizes him. Just completely throws him under the bus.
The other key line in that is that she says, you're already miserable. And it's like, oh, how miserable is he?
Yeah, well, we do, you know, I mean...
Do we find that out?
We do slowly get to see how miserable House is. I think House MD genuinely, like, handles misery quite well. Like, I think, like, when most shows would show, like, someone drinking or just being angry, I think, like, House will just go home and just watch telly all night and just take Vicodin. And I do think that, like, over the course of the series, like, House being a miserable character is kind of, like, shown in quite a visceral way. It definitely makes House stand out as a character. He's not just, like, I don't think that he's just sad on the surface. I think that, you know, the more you watch House, the more... It does actually explore quite a dangerously depressed person.
Because on the surface, he just seems like a bit of a misanthrope.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't really know much about his private life
at
the moment. He's just at work. He's analysing cases. He's throwing his ball into the air and he's catching it. This is a nice shot, like how he throws the ball up in the air. It's a good touch. It's a good look. And you also get those little eureka moments where he gets primed by another primary character and it makes him think, ah, okay, maybe I can figure this out.
Well, that's the thing. I think in the early episodes, and I've noticed this from us watching, is that the eureka moment didn't come, like, he had an idea when Wilson, like, you know, said, oh, you know, oh, the pills look the same or whatever it was to make him think about that maybe there was a problem with the medicine itself that the kid was given.
Yeah.
But, like, you then afterwards see House doing research. Like, in the later seasons, I especially think that House would just be told that by Wilson and immediately come up with the idea and stroll into the room and be like, I know the answer. But, like, in this, he's like, you know, he's on the internet. I assume he's on WebMD, whatever it is. Like, you know, he's looking at the board, he's thinking. Like, there's a lot more of those moments where it feels like House is, like, an intelligent person. Like, he doesn't just have the superpower of intelligence.
Yeah.
It feels like he, you know, is going away and thinking and researching, which is a really nice touch. I think it makes the, like, I don't know, makes the early episodes quite relaxing.
And also, it makes him seem more like a scientist than this kind of hardcore rationalist who can just deduce it by sheer logic rather than, you know, it isn't a matter of him just locking in the relevant amounts of information into a logical chain. He's like, okay, I need to research this and then come up with a logical chain of reasoning around it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is quite a nice little touch. And so it gets lost in the later episodes, you say?
I think so. I think it, I mean, we'll discuss it as we get there, but I definitely think going on, House just comes up with ideas, which I can kind of see why, because I get why lots of montages of him doing research. would be quite a strange thing to add in. But House definitely, like, you know, he's done research. He's come up with, like, a theory of why it might be the case. He's like, there's definitely something up with the medicine. He goes away. He looks at, like, what medicines would interact and what medicines probably, like, would cause that thing. And he clearly spends, like, a day or a few hours on it. Whereas I think in the later episodes, he just knows things. Like, just these crazy things. And I think in the earlier episodes, they're definitely trying to portray a more realistic, like, doctor. Whereas in the later episodes, he becomes more of... he's not really a doctor. He's just Dr. House, which is some sort of, like, extra subgenre of doctor who just knows everything. Yeah. And once again, the, the logical method in the title is being explored. Like, if I also did philosophy at uni, which is fantastic. But, you know, if you didn't know what Occam's razor is, I think this episode is extremely well written to not only solve a medical problem, but to also explain what Occam's razor is to people.
But he also puts a little Haussian twist on it and says, the simplest explanation is that someone's screwed up.
Yeah.
Like, human error is the... He puts his little riff on it that it's always about human error, usually, as the creator of problems.
Absolutely.
It's very misanthropic.
Well, that's what they're going for, in case you hadn't noticed.
Oh, right. I didn't notice at
all.
It was
very subtle. In case you don't notice as well, the mother doesn't like the lady.
Yeah.
The thing, and as well with the Occam's razor thing as well, is that they actually come up with the theory initially that it could be two rare conditions instead of one impossible condition.
Yeah.
Which is quite another funny twist on the idea that actually, you know, the simplest idea can sometimes be that two things happened, not just one. Which is nice that the showrunners, like, understand the concept and are able to play with it enough.
The world is messy from a causation standpoint, and that's kind of what I think they're going for, is, like, people are messy, disease causation is messy, the world is messy, and so sometimes it's just not one thing that causes something, it's sometimes a multitude of factors. Quite a very deep exploration of causation for a primetime TV procedural drama.
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
I do think House's, like, deductions are relatively, like, they're there. I don't know if you've seen the earlier seasons of Sherlock.
Yeah.
But I think, like, there's quite a good sketch, one of the few good sketches that he's ever done. I can't even remember his name. He has a really terrible late night show, but he does a sketch of how Sherlock Holmes, like, deduces something, and then people go, well, no, it's actually this, because the problem with deduction is that it's never 100% certain. But I do think that House's deductions are relatively on point, or at least he, like, never says something explicitly. He's, like, within a ballpark.
Yeah.
Which is kind of demonstrated with the medicine thing. Like, he gets the medicine aspect right, but then there's enough evidence to refute the rest. But then because he got the medicine, her giving him the cough medicine, he's like, right, well, I must be onto something. That couldn't have just been a coincidence. And I think that, House isn't just saying things and they're being true. He's is talking logically to an extent, which I think the show does very well. Like, he doesn't feel like the new Sherlock Holmes, where he just says things and they're just true, like jumps to insane conclusions where the evidence could mean several things.
Yeah, that is true.
And is this the big reveal?
Yep. He's figuring it out.
All solved.
It's just ripping hair out of his head and saying, oh, it's hair loss.
Well, this is the thing, like, this is the point where, like, House has been so confident at each point. This is the point where he just walks into an ICU and just goes, yeah, I'm probably right.
Like, yeah, it's like, I'm infallible now. I've got the shield of House deduction around me, protecting me.
Yeah. Because he's such a, like... I think it's Hugh Laurie's performance that pulls it off, but for someone who's so, like, quiet and doesn't like talking to anyone. He just has such an insane flair for the dramatic, which I know is also to make it a more interesting show, yeah. to make House more interesting. But for a man who like doesn't really like talking to anyone and seems to be like enjoy being left alone to like think, he will then just confidently, as this insane extrovert, just walk in, potentially kill the patient when he could just say, oh, you know, we could run a test.
Yeah. Rather than this insane demonstration of his knowledge and skill. But I think that's probably the David Shaw's kind of legalistic experience where, you know, there's a need to rhetorically and physically instantiate your correct procedure in front of people to convince them.
That's like his closing statement.
And I guess in a way, that's kind of, in a way, that's a similarity between medicine and kind of the law, is that you have to demonstrate with a certain degree of confidence in order to inspire your patients to allow you to take risks and, you know, get the job done. Mm. Otherwise, it'd be like, okay, if they go, oh, probabilistically, you might this, that, and the other. It's like, oh, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. Gotta have like a bit of confidence. So in the same way as trying to convince a judge of something, you have to convince the patient of something so that they will go ahead with it or agree with it.
I mean,
it's not just writers might. It's kind of, there's a need to use might to be right.
I mean, it is an interesting analysis of David Shaw, because I didn't know he was a lawyer before this, and the more that you bring it up, the more convinced I am that it affects him. Because that's a very good point. Like, there are these dramatic, like, closing, like, arguments in each one, in each episode.
Yeah. I think it also accounts for the economy of the writing, and also with the dramatic flair, there's a very kind of straightforward, logical jump between plot points.
Mm.
And it will kind of tie up neatly together in a closing statement that convinces you that, yeah, House is a pretty good doctor and he's got a good team. What are they going to do next week? What challenges are they going to confront next time?
Yeah. And this is still within the realms of House does crazy things, but they're reasonable. Yeah. I do think to keep the show exciting, they do get slowly more insane. But we'll explore those, and I very much look forward to you seeing those. And hey, you can decide whether or not that's the show jumping the shark as well. Because, you know, maybe it's just natural character development. The House would just become more insane.
He seems a bit insane at the moment. He's now doing a comparative analysis of all of the variations of one drug in a chemist that seems to have loads of them for some reason. He's found it. He's done it. He's proved it. Independent of the case, the person's well, but he still goes ahead with it and goes through and looks through every single thing just to see how right he was, or that he was right, which kind of introduces a bit of uncertainty about his own method, like how much of it he wasn't 100% sure. In a sense, he still needed to have that independent verification. It wasn't a done deal that was the case. It just happened to be.
Yeah.
That's scary.
But it's a good moment of characterization as well, because it doesn't just show that House cures him and is happy. It's this him sitting there for hours afterwards. Like, the case isn't really important. I mean, it obviously this is the early series where they're trying to establish everything, but the fact that they do demonstrate that House isn't just happy that everything was resolved. He needs to know why. He needs to be right. It's a very like succinct way of showing that. It's not just House doesn't even say anything about it. He doesn't like go, oh, but I'm unsatisfied because I do not know the answer. Like, just the fact that he's carrying out that, you kind of immediately see, oh, I get this guy. And it's just like another example of the earlier seasons, like, just doing that really well. Mm. Like, it really does establish like this guy in a very like interesting, like, way that isn't just people talking and explaining what they're thinking.
I think a lot of people would be satisfied with just the resolution of the human story, which is the person is cured, hooray, and that's the end of it. There's this kind of weird obsessiveness about the problem, the case independent of the humans. It's like the humans are just don't factor in as strongly as you would think for a doctor, which is interesting.
It's incredibly unique. I think sorry guys, what were you gonna say as your closing statement?
My closing statement is, what a jolly good episode, even if the establishing shot was absurd as it was grotesque. a sand or limestone building physically shaking during coitus.
Well, I really enjoyed watching that with you.
Thank you very much.
That was a really...
The pleasure is all mine.
Oh, I'm talking just about the sex scene specifically.
Okay, yes. It was an eye-opener.
But yeah, it's... A lot of the episodes are going to be formulaic and maybe we won't have anything to talk about. But the early episodes especially, I think there is like something to claw into. That they're establishing everything really well. And yes. It'll be interesting to see how, like, you know, I don't know, which characters do you think haven't really been set in stone yet? I think Foreman, House and Cuddy are pretty much there. I think the rest of the team are like, they've done things, but I don't think that they're like why they're interesting is there yet.
Yeah, Cuddy, I can see she's kind of like the hard boiled, not hard boiled, but she's like the police chief in a, you know, noir, film noir classic. She's always kind of straight to the edge by the book. If you don't do it, House, you're in trouble, big trouble. But I don't know. I want to see if there... I don't want to cast any set-in-stone judgments. I just don't know these characters intimately enough in comparison to you. So I'd say, yeah, Cuddy's trope is established, but whatever's beyond the surface I haven't seen yet. But that remains to be seen. We're only 3 episodes in.
I know, it's incredible. I think she's a bit beyond her trope, though. That's what I mean. More about that, like, you know, like Wilson is the trope of a nice man, but I think Cuddy is that police chief character. But the fact that she plays into the game, is a bit of an extra element. I can see why she's interesting, and you can understand that Foreman doesn't want to be like House, but at the same time he's kind of becoming that. And then House obviously has had all of the any interesting characterization they could come up with, they've thrown at House. So I think those characters are like, they're tropes, but they have like a small twist on them, which makes them slightly more interesting and stand out.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I think that's a good analysis. I'd say the characters that have been least developed, I think, in my opinion, is Wilson and Cameron. It seems like, apart from Cameron being awkward around patients and saying weird shit all the time, and Wilson just going, here's a case that I found. Would you like to try it out, Mr. House? I mean, Dr. House.
I found it outside in the bin.
Nothing crazy about this. You might have found it interesting.
I'd agree with that. I think, and you know what, I'm being unfair on Cameron. I think she's like, she does, I think the, you know, the sex relationship thing, although very clunky, is like, It demonstrates that she has some depth and that she's like willing to go against her better nature.
Okay. Yeah. And be a bit. Yeah. But we'll see what happens in the next episode, which is called Maternity. Now, if you haven't watched the previous episode, is it episode 2?
Yes.
That's called Paternity. Oh.
Incredible.
Thinking ahead there.
So I would.
By David. Good old David.
Well, I suggest anybody, like, if anybody has an interest in continuing to listen to this, I would definitely watch the episode ahead of time, just get a refresher, and then just listen to what we have to say, think on it, let us know what you think, if you have any differences of opinion. But hey, it's an excuse to watch House again week on week, as it was
aired. As they say, like, share, and prescribe.
I don't know what format we're on. So do whatever the equivalent of those are. All right, well, yeah, so thank you for listening to this. Thanks to Gaz.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, Harvey, podcast.
Well, it's our podcast. I'm saying thanks for just being involved.
Oh, that's very nice of you. I wish I could say the same.
You could.
I could. But the misanthropy is rubbing off, so I won't. Gotta hide those feelings deep inside.
Well, thank you very much for watching the podcast. We'll see you next week with episode 4, Maternity, which will still be 15 years after the fact, too late.